Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is recovering in the hospital after breaking three ribs, and while she's there, her staff is planning to redo her entire office in Nerf.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews NBC News journalist Hallie Jackson. Hallie also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump is so freaked out about Democrats winning back the House that he's already moving to hamstring the Russia investigation. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The more results we get from Tuesday's elections, the clearer it becomes that this was a blue wave and a national repudiation of Trump's presidency. Democrats had their biggest net gain in the House since Watergate. They won the popular vote in the House by about 7 points. And they won statewide races in key swing states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Wisconsin. Or as Trump put it,
the Republican Party defied history to expand our Senate majority while significantly beating expectations in the House for the midterm and midterm year.
Sorry, did you say the midterm year? Oh, okay, I see what's happening. Trump thought it was the midterm election, not the midterm election. That's why he spent all his time campaigning at the M&M store with the Times Square Spider-Man.
And tonight I am happy to announce that Dirty Elmo has been elected to the House of Representatives at Bubba Gump Shrimp.
So for a few hours, the big story was Democrats massively outperforming Republicans in the House and in swing states across the country, which of course meant Trump had to do something crazy to get the spotlight back. And that's what happened yesterday when Trump lost his mind on national television in a press conference. In fact, at one point, he got so mad at a question about the Russia investigation that he had to walk away from the podium.
On the Russia investigation, are you concerned that you may have—
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation?
Look at him. President Ralph Cramden over there. One of these days! But aside from his usual theatrics, Trump's performance yesterday was deeply revealing because it made it clear that he sees himself as above the law. In fact, he can't even explain how laws work or how they're made. Listen to Trump ramble about how he can't pass tax cuts because he doesn't have the votes in Congress.
This will have to be now proposed because if we did it now, we don't have the votes in the Senate. We would need 10 Democrat votes. We probably couldn't get them. If we could, we could pass it very easily in the House. But there's no reason to waste time because you don't have the votes in the Senate. So now we go into the Senate. We don't have the 10 votes. And what happens? It doesn't get passed. Even if it gets out of the House, it doesn't get passed.
It's like watching an episode of Schoolhouse Rock if the Bill overdosed on Ambien. Now, one feature of our constitutional system is that Congress gets to constrain the power of the president and investigate him. And right after their victory in the House, Democrats announced that they would use that power to request Trump's tax returns, which he has hidden from the public, despite the fact that presidents going back decades have released theirs. And when he was asked about that yesterday, you could tell Trump was freaking out from how much he rambled through his answer.
Point blank, Democrats go after your tax returns. Will you try to block that, or will you allow them to have
them? Well, look, as I've told you, they're under audit. They have been for a long time. They're extremely complex. People wouldn't understand them. They're done by among the biggest and best law firms in the country. Same thing with the accounting firms. The accountants are a very, very large, powerful firm from the standpoint of respect. They're highly respected. Big firm. But when you're under audit, and I'm on a very continuous audit because there are so many companies, and it is a very big company, far bigger than you would even understand. But it's a great company, but it's big, and it's complex, and it's probably feet high. It's a very complex instrument, and I think that people wouldn't understand it.
In other words, yes, I have a girlfriend, but she goes to another school, and the school is in Canada, and also she died. Also, what do you mean people wouldn't understand it? They're tax returns. Trump sounds like a dad who doesn't know how to answer a question from his five-year-old. Dad, where does wind come from?
You wouldn't understand. I definitely know the answer, but you wouldn't understand.
Trump cannot abide any checks on his power because he sees himself as above the law. For him, laws aren't constraints. They're weapons to be wielded against your opponents. For example, he was asked what would happen if Democrats exercised their constitutional authority to investigate him, and he said that if they did that, he would consider it war.
Are you offering an my way or highway scenario to the Democrats? You're saying that if they start investigating you, that you can play that game and investigate
better
them.
Better than them.
Can you compartmentalize that?
And I think I know more than they know.
Can you compartmentalize that and still continue to work with them for the benefit of the rest of the country?
No.
Are all bets off?
No. If they do that, then it's just all it is a warlike posture.
A warlike posture? I'm sorry, but I wouldn't say posture is your strong suit. You look like someone let the air out of the Michelin man. In fact, Trump is so petty and vindictive that he actually took time out of his press conference to slam members of his own party who lost their re-election bids, implying that they lost because they didn't support him enough.
Candidates who embraced our message of low taxes, low regulations, low crime, strong borders, and great judges excelled. Barbara Comstock was another one. I mean, I think she could have won that race, but she didn't want to have any embrace. Peter Roskam didn't want the embrace. Eric Paulson didn't want the embrace.
Why does he keep calling it the embrace? Sounds like a Mike Pence euphemism for sex.
Once a year, on my birthday, we engage in the embrace.
It's like a Seinfeld episode where George Costanza complains that he went in for a hug on a date and got rejected. I didn't get the embrace, Jerry! No embrace! She de-embraced! Looks like you'll have to embrace yourself! It's so much like a Seinfeld episode, Trump is even doing the Babu finger now.
You are a rude, terrible person.
He's a very bad man.
And it's not just his petty score settling. Trump's vindictiveness was very much on display with his power grab at the Justice Department and his decision to fire Attorney General Jeff Sessions. In that press conference, reporters tried to ask Trump how he would approach the Russia investigation now that the midterms are over, and whether he would try to install a new attorney general. But Trump, who spent the entire press conference rambling and yelling at people, was suspiciously coy.
Can you give us clarity, sir, on your thinking currently, now after the midterms, about your attorney general and your deputy attorney general? Do they have long-term job security?
I'd rather answer that at a little bit different time.
You can say yes or no, but saying, I'd like to answer that later, is the most suspicious answer you can give. If you get pulled over and your answer to have you been drinking is, let me get back to you, it's breathalyzer time. Of course, it turned out that Trump had already decided to fire Sessions, although he refused to do it himself.
Jeff Sessions was fired. He wrote a letter today saying that he was resigning at the request of the president.
The president, who became famous for the phrase, you're fired, punting to his chief of staff to give Sessions the boot. John Kelly didn't even do it face-to-face, but opted to fire Sessions by phone.
These guys are such cowards. Trump didn't want to fire Sessions himself, so he had Kelly do it, and Kelly didn't want to do it either, so he just called him. I'm surprised they didn't just send Stephen Miller to perch on Sessions' windowsill. With Democrats regaining power in Washington, Trump is now seriously threatened for the first time in his presidency, and in response, he's becoming more lawless. He sees the law not as a constraint on his power, but as a tool to protect himself. And as Jeff Sessions just learned, he'll attack anyone in his way, whether you're an opponent who hates him or a supporter who gives him
the embrace.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is NBC News chief White House correspondent. You can see her on NBC's Today Nightly News with Lester Holt and weekdays on MSNBC at 10 a.m. Please welcome to the show, Hallie Jackson, everyone. Oh, my God, Hallie.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here. You have made quite an effort to be here because I saw you live at 2 a.m. on the White House lawn last night. That's in D.C. That's not here.
It's 3.5 hours away.
3.5 hours away. So talk me through, because you were on the Today Show this morning. So what was your schedule then after you wrapped at 2 a.m.?
So go home, pack a bag, hop a flight, first shuttle out of Washington to come here. Today Show, I did my show for MSNBC. And then, I don't know if you heard, the president held a press conference today.
Yeah, he did.
And so we did special reports for that for NBC News. 2.5 hours. This thing was long. It was his longest press conference ever. And then I was doing a pre-interview with one of your producers for this show, and Jeff Sessions resigned.
Yeah.
And then we hopped off the phone and went back into it for that.
There's so much to unpack there. Let's start with Sessions in that he did not mention it. Donald Trump did not mention it during a hour and a half press conference.
Well, he was asked about him very specifically.
And yet chose, but this is obviously something he knew was happening. What is your take on this? What are you hearing from your sources as far as, was this a forced resignation?
100%. The president asked Jeff Sessions to resign. Jeff Sessions handed in that resignation letter, which said, you asked me to resign. Here is my resignation letter. This is not surprising. This was expected. This has been rumored, if you guys follow the news, rumored for months and months. That doesn't mean it's not still significant, right? This is a really sort of critical moment here, because if you look at the arc of where Republicans were, for example, back last year, remember when Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator, said there will be holy hell to pay if Donald Trump fires Jeff Sessions? Lindsey Graham has certainly changed his tune as Republicans have come to accept, I think kind of reluctantly, that relationship is just broken. It's broken beyond repair. So what I'm hearing, what we're hearing from our team at NBC News is that Jeff Sessions may not be gone from the political world. He's considering possibly, per people close to him, running for his old Senate seat.
The Doug Jones seat, right.
Going up against Doug Jones. So he may end up back in Washington, perhaps working with or against President Trump again.
I don't think he'll ever work against President Trump. That is my takeaway, that I feel as though most of the Republicans who have shown any resistance to him ultimately are never going to truly resist anything Donald Trump tries to do.
The interesting thing about Jeff Sessions is there's a lot of headlines. Listen, this all matters as it relates. A lot of it matters as it relates to the special counsel investigation, right, with Jeff Sessions recused himself from. That was, in the eyes of the president, the original sin, the thing he could never forgive Jeff Sessions for. But here's the thing. If you look at the DOJ, they've actually implemented, almost more than any other agency, Donald Trump's agenda.
Yeah.
Jeff Sessions has done exactly what Donald Trump has wanted him to do. And so there's this really interesting, I think, split or dichotomy between the political sphere, the political side of it, and then the policy side.
I want to ask about the fact that Donald Trump, you know, the Russia investigation is the reason he fires Jeff Sessions. Obviously, that's a little bit more stressful for him now that the Democrats have taken back the House and they have this power of oversight. Do you think, obviously, based on the press conference today, it struck me that this was a man who was a little stressed out. Is it likely that that's what's stressing him out?
Part of it, yeah. I think he's, listen, for the first time, he's now in Washington. He's inside the White House, and he is facing a check on his power. That has not happened for him before. So I think he's in this mode where he's looking around, and that's what we're hearing from folks, and he's seeing, hey, now Democrats do control the House of Representatives. There will be an onslaught of subpoenas, and that's a hassle for West Wing staffers. You have to deal with that. It's paperwork, it's time, it's energy. And it's also something that Donald Trump knows is going to be coming. Now, what he did today was issue essentially a threat to the Democrats. Like, hey, I'll work with you on infrastructure, I'll work with you on trade, but not if you come at me about my tax returns, for example. Nancy Pelosi didn't seem so keen on that when she spoke, so we're up for it.
Well, the thing I would say why you wouldn't be keen on it, and this is just based on everything he's ever said or done, I don't believe that he's actually going to be honest on that deal, right? Do you think if Democrats laid off tax returns, he would actually make a deal on infrastructure?
Here's what I can say. This is a president and this is a person, and I've covered Donald Trump for his campaign, his candidacy, the transition, the presidency now. He is somebody who has issued threats and not always followed through with them, and that's just the facts of the case. So there's not a lot of past history to point to that the president would necessarily follow through on the threat that he's making today.
You've been in a lot of press conferences. Were you watching today at that mayhem, and was part of you jealous that you weren't there, or were you more super relieved that you were safely far away?
Oh, my God. I was crawling out of my skin, making phone calls this morning like, I got to skip Seth. I got to go back. What do you got to do? But I had to be in New York anyway for my MSNBC show. We have an awesome team at NBC News, and so they were out there repping NBC. I will say this, though. Watching, and we were sort of on set doing the analysis piece for NBC News for our stations throughout the day, there were moments there that was tense and uncomfortable. That's not a hot take. That's like a very lukewarm take. That was a weird, you know, a press conference that is not normal for the East Room necessarily. But the attacks on the media and the way that he has these sort of moments and interactions, that actually does well for him among his supporters. Mm. And that's something to remember, that that actually plays for him.
How do you, obviously I see you a lot at press conferences with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. How as a reporter do you prepare to ask questions to a person that doesn't always give an answer to the question that you've asked?
So it's about thinking about, we do these pretty extensive discussions with our team, and there's a lot that goes into it, right? You don't just show up with your notebook at like 2:30 in the briefing room, especially because the press briefings have become so rare. The press secretary has only held, by our count, 3 in the last 2 months. That's like a very, very extremely low number. So when you have these opportunities, you want to make the most of them. So it's about thinking ahead, and this is not like, you know, rocket science, but thinking ahead to how is she going to deflect your question? And then how do you ask the question to try to prevent that deflection? Because there's a lot of discussion about, hey, do you really get anything out of these press briefings? Listen, it's about having a senior administration official get on the record and to try to hold truth to power.
Do you feel as though, because it strikes me that this administration more than ever, whatever they say on the record, they do not consider it on the record. They will often at the next press briefing say that it was misunderstood or they didn't actually say it that way. Is that frustrating? Because you are getting them on the record and then they're saying, no, that you have a different record. Yeah.
I mean, yes. Yeah. It is frustrating.
Is that frustrating or is that awesome?
It's totally awesome. No, of course it's frustrating. And we talk about that with folks inside the White House and our sources in and around the West Wing of like, hey, this doesn't make any sense. This is actually a direct quote that the president said, and you're trying to say this other thing. I think one of the important things, though, is unlike any other administration, now, this is my first president that I've ever covered. So I'm like,
congrats on the first one.
But I'm coming into this from having covered the Republican primary during the campaign. But this is a president who, unlike any other, we don't necessarily need like 8,000 million sources. He has a window into exactly what he's thinking and exactly what he's considering on Twitter.
Yeah.
There are no surprises. And so in a way, that's actually kind of useful. You hear something from a source, you're like, oh my God, and you send a note, and then he tweets it. Okay. Yeah.
That backs it up.
Right.
Obviously, when you were covering, especially the campaign, you're on the road a lot. You had a very unique way of being nutritional with your eating. Because I know being on the road, having done it for years, it's hard to eat well. What was your trick?
Baby food.
Okay.
But So I said this in an interview once. So here's the thing, there's pouches, it's like kale and spinach and pears. You have kids, you know, like happy baby, and you go to them at the grocery store. Pack them in the suitcase, and then when you're out on the road, you pop at a gas station, you get like beef jerky, and then you have one of those things, and you're good to go. It's a total meal.
But you've had an issue. Very glamorous. You've had an issue at TSA with this.
Right, because it looks like liquid in your bag.
Yeah.
So the TSA agents will stop, and they'll be like, well, what is this? And I'll be like, well, that's baby food, it's allowed. It's 4 ounces, but it's okay because it's for children. And they go, well, you don't have a baby.
Yeah. Like,
well, but you don't know where I'm going that there's not a baby. And
oh. Very nice loophole. Very well played. Hey, keep up the great work. Thank you so much for making time for us tonight. I really appreciate it. Hallie Jackson, everybody. You can see her weekdays at 10 a.m. on MSNBC.
Hi, this is Henry. I'm Late Night. I'm here with Hallie Jackson from MSNBC.
What's up?
What's up, Hallie? It's been a long day for you.
Henry, we're doing it.
We're doing it.
We're living this day together.
We were live last night, but I was complaining about how tired I was all day, and you slept for like probably 90 minutes, if that, through election night till today.
But it's only 48 hours, right? So you have to do this like once every 2 years.
Right.
Although with this administration, it's a little bit more.
I was going to say, I imagine you're not like sleeping 9 hours a night.
I just eat bonbons and sleep a good 12, and then I just rock in a hammock all day.
It's so relaxing to be the chief White House correspondent. Turns out it's this. Yeah, you sleep in a hammock, you show up in the afternoon, and then you're done.
Exactly. You roll up.
I did want to ask, because you mentioned pre-interview, you were chatting with a producer at the show. You and I were chatting this afternoon.
Yes.
It's really interesting. We're having a great conversation. And then all of a sudden, you said, Jeff Sessions was fired, got to go by, and you hung up. And I was like,
I'm so sorry, by the way.
I know it was very cool because you were doing the job. So yes. I'm wondering what happened between then and now. Like, so when that happens, what do you do?
So in that moment, the first thing you do is call sources at the White House. Mm-hmm. Now the funny part about that or the like disturbing, I had no idea what was going on because I was talking with you. The president apparently tweeted, mm-hmm. my producer who's with me, Stacey Klein, in our White House unit, came up and said, Jeff Sessions resigned.
So then I hung up the phone. Through the tweet.
I saw it through Stacey. I didn't know he had tweeted. And so I'm on the phone with the White House source going, what happened?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, dude, look at Twitter, you know. So then I looked at Twitter, and as we're doing it, we're walking to set because Lester, obviously, for NBC Nightly News, was getting up for our special report. So we're like walking and talking and calling sources and trying to find out more and trying to just get the backstory.
How does that compare to your typical day?
So typically, I'm up in the mornings. We have a pretty awesome and big White House unit, so we're always sort of trading off Today Show or Nightly News on the network side, but every day I do have the MSNBC show. So I'm up pretty early, getting read in. Our first conference call is at 6:15, so we're going through what are the storylines.
6:15?
6:15, yeah.
Wow.
So we're looking at what's the big storylines, what do we want to lead with, how do we talk through. It always changes throughout the morning.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're just shot out of a cannon, and you go all day. Yeah, and then we do the show. I go to the White House every afternoon, and then it's a focus on that.
How did you kind of build sources in this White House, and how do you keep sources?
So that's a really good question, because I think that's something that journalists have to do. Bob Costa, who is a journalist for the Washington Post, who's been a friend of mine since high school, said to me once, and we were just sort of having a conversation. This was years ago before I was at the White House. And he says, gosh, every day you wake up and it's like you got to start your Rolodex all over again. Mm-hmm. And that's the mentality you have to have, right? Like your Rolodex is never big enough. So it's about trying to have face-to-face meetings with people when you can, which is hard when you're busy.
I also imagine with this White House, it's hard because everyone's in their job for like 6 months and then leaves.
Which actually is not a bad thing because they're in their job for 6 months, leaves, and then they're still talking to the president and everybody inside the White House.
So that doesn't
necessarily preclude them.
That's the former senior official?
Former, yes, exactly. It's an incredible thing in this White House because I have covered sort of campaigns and political apparatus that have been rather disciplined. I don't know that that's an adjective you would necessarily apply to this West Wing, and that's not pejorative at all. I'm just saying it's people who like to talk.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I'm going to take advantage of that, of course.
And as you were saying kind of out with Seth, too, like, I mean, there aren't many press briefings anymore, but Trump does make himself pretty available to the press
and that's,
in unconventional ways.
I'm so glad you're bringing that up. It's a point I wanted to make, and we just sort of got beyond it. But the idea that this is a president who, yes, he's got Twitter. We have a window into his thinking, but he also is coming out on departures in what we call sprays when he's in the Oval Office, and he's answering questions from reporters for 10, 15, 20 minutes at a time. Now, you're like shouting over the rotor wash of Marine One, right? And it's not like an ideal setting, but at the same time, former presidents didn't used to do that. Mm-hmm. So, hey, if a president's going to talk, let's hear it. Let's get at it.
Do White House staffers hate when he does that? Because there's this moment where people are asking him questions, and he's always like, you see someone on the White House staff saying, all right, Mr. President, thank you, then looking to the press and saying, we're done, and he keeps going.
I actually think a lot less of that, right? I think that happened in the beginning a little bit, but I think these days there is a very explicit sense inside the West Wing that has become, those moments have become replacements for the press briefings. So there are times when they know he's going to answer questions.
Yeah.
So they're like, yeah, we're not doing a briefing because the president already said he wants to talk to the media. And
right.
So I don't think that these days that is a discouragement. I think that's been a little bit of a shift from the beginning of the administration.
Right. You mentioned the press briefings. What are those moments like before Sarah Huckabee Sanders gets to the podium and after? Because you're in the room with all these other reporters. You guys are competitors, but you're also colleagues. So what's relationship like with the other people there? And what are you guys doing before she comes out and then afterwards?
Well, a lot of times the press briefings run late. That's not a function of this administration. That's past ones as well.
Of course,
so you're like, you know, waiting to get it on, basically. But you're sort of talking with your colleagues, you're focusing on your questions, you're looking sort of online and in our internal systems to see, has anything broken in the last 20 minutes? Is something popping we should ask about? Well, no joke. I mean, that happens. Yeah. She comes out and then does her thing, and it's usually fairly short. She runs an average of about 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's a press secretary's prerogative. Obviously, we'd love to go longer. Not all press secretaries do. And then
typical? What did, like, Obama and, like,
well,
George
so I didn't I cover former President Obama, but Josh Earnest, Jay Carney, I'm told they went hour plus, hour and a half.
Hard
I mean, they would
remember.
Exhaust. Yeah. People would run out of questions because they were going so long. I cannot see that happening in this White House.
Yeah.
And then after the briefings, you know, we get up and do live shots for MSNBC.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of the sprint to the finish for Nightly News. There was this moment when you talk about the collegiality that happened actually a few months ago. And a colleague in the press corps, Jordan Fabian, you know, it's important to ask follow-ups. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you don't get the opportunity. I had been trying to ask a follow-up question.
Yeah.
And the press secretary tried to move on. And Jordan Fabian said, hey, I'll let Hallie finish her question. And it was kind of a cool moment. And it was like, all right. And I think you see a lot of that collegiality.
Well, yeah, because I remember that moment. And then there was a similar moment today where Trump was going after Jim Acosta and Peter Alexander kind of steps in and says, no, he's not a bad person.
Right.
He's a really great reporter. Has that been really refreshing, kind of exciting to see these moments where that the press corps is, it seems like you all kind of have each other's back.
So it's interesting because I actually think what's new about that is that the public is seeing it. I think at the time that I've been a member of the press corps, that's how it is, right?
Uh-huh.
We all, you know, that's just sort of the status quo and what we expect with each other. But now it's actually on public display, I think, in a way that it never has been because it has never had to have been.
And that's because Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Trump are outwardly just criticizing reporters, like in the public eye.
So, and listen, we're not the enemy of the people. We are the voice of the people. And that's how I like to think of it. You go to these rallies. I was out on the campaign trail a bunch this past week as the president was gearing up for the midterms. And his supporters will say to you, I had a woman say to me, you know, he doesn't mean it. You know, it's kind of an act. It's like but they sincerely mean it, right?
Yeah.
These people are a lot of the folks that I meet are genuinely nice. They say, they think the media is unfair, but they know that you're not actually an enemy of the people. Some of them.
Yeah. It is such a surreal thing that just we're at this moment where enemy of the people is like a laughing, silly thing to some people.
Oh, it's totally not funny, right? Fake news is not funny. I hate the joke.
Right.
I hate the thing. You know,
but
at the same time, we're there to ask questions about policy, right? Or personnel or politics, but it's about the accountability factor. And so I think that there is a line between, you know, being able to be reflective and stand up for our industry, but at the same time, be able to get out there and say, hey, let me ask you about this really important issue on a question that you may not have answered seven times when you've been asked, right?
Yeah, we talked about this earlier. That balance to me is really interesting and really tricky, but I think you're doing an awesome job pulling it off.
Oh my God, thank
you. Yeah, we were so happy to have you here. I feel like I should just let you go. You've been working for like 2 days straight. I feel like just go sleep now. Go just like turn off your phone. I feel so bad. You've been on TV constantly and reporting. That's
Henry.
That's not going to happen.
Today's show, tomorrow morning. I'll be scripting and then I'll see you tomorrow morning.
All right. See you then. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Henry.
This is great.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today.
Yeah.
Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.